Welcome to the Attractions Podcast. You are all clear for dispatch. Have fun.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 36 of the Attractions Podcast. I'm Banks.
And I'm Brittany.
And we have a special...
I'm Jason.
Jason. There's a bit of a delay. It's live. We're live, guys. Jason Hampton is our special guest this week, special co-host. If you were a fan of the Disney Channel, or you grew up watching the Disney Channel back in the 90s, there was the all-new Mickey Mouse Club, which ran from 1989 to, I think, 95, 96. Was that right, Jason? And so Jason was one of the original Mouseketeers on the show for the first four seasons and then came back season seven. And we're so happy to have you with us, Jason. Thanks for joining us this week.
Thanks so much, man. I almost broke out my jacket for that opening, you know?
Oh, my God. Those Letterman jackets, I remember growing up wishing like you could buy those jackets and customize them.
You could. You could get them out of the Disney the magazine back then. You could order
I remember that Disney magazine. Yeah. Oh my God.
I completely missed this boat. I need to go back in time now. So we're going to do the podcast as usual. Jason's going to join us talking about the news. And then for the main attraction, we're going to talk to him about his time filming the show at the then Disney MGM Studios. So with all that going, let's just go ahead and start with what we've been doing this week. So Brittany, how's the life out there in Texas?
Well, for those of you who don't follow me on social media, I am a parent now. I have a puppy. French, a 9-week-old French bulldog puppy named Brody. We named him after Chief Brody from Jaws. He's very cute. He's teething, so super bitey, but he's so sweet, so emotionally intuitive, more than any dog I've ever had. And I'm very tired. And this whole thing has taught me how much of a worrier I am and how having a kid would probably kill me.
Trust me, like I know Chase can account. We both have two kids, so it's a job.
I can't even imagine. That's all that Josh and I have been talking about. Like, oh my God, imagine if this was a person and not a dog.
Well, I've seen the photos, and Brody is the cutest little thing. You already gave him his own Instagram, so
I did. It's brody.lay.french. If you want to follow, there's some cute pics and videos. We mostly just wanted to document his puppyhood, but also there are so many dog Instagrams here in Austin that it just felt like something you had to do.
Jason, where are you located?
I'm actually in Boston right now.
Okay. Yeah. How are things been going for you since all this quarantine started?
This is one of the bad states, so it's kind of been really tough here, and it's just, we're crazy. And I have two little ones, and I can tell you, Brittany, one is hard, but two is like having 10.
Oh
it's,
my God!
It's really exhausting, and wears you down for sure, especially when you're trapped. You know, the kids just want to get out and run around and play.
I can't even imagine.
It's been tough. We've been trying to keep ourselves busy and, you know, obviously keeping in touch on Zooms and StreamYards and fun things like this. So, yeah, I appreciate this so much to kind of pull me out of that just for even if a little bit.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, we appreciate you joining us. We're trying to do a lot more special guests because, you know, a lot of people are staying at home. So, if anything, to get people just kind of distracted from things going on and pull them out of reality for a little bit. I love it.
Yeah, for sure.
So are
I
you
say to... I had a French bulldog for 13 years and it was the best dog I ever had in my life. So you're in for a treat. That's definitely a great choice. I can tell you that firsthand.
We've been obsessed with that breed for a long time and it literally just fell in our laps. We were looking and then we happened upon someone and he was like, yeah, you can come get him tomorrow. We were like, okay, sure. but it's been a whirlwind and super rewarding. I can't wait till he gets a little bit bigger. He's too small to walk or really go anywhere right now. But he's great.
Very loyal. Yeah. They're a little tough.
So sweet.
Too,
really. Yeah.
Yeah.
He jumped That's off fun. The couch yesterday, which was horrifying because he's like the size of a baked potato. He's so small and he jumped like 2 feet off of the couch. And I was just like, horrified, like holding my breath, because you know their little bodies are so fragile and everything, but he was just fine. It was like just bounced right back.
Now, are you able to be, are you working on anything at home, Jason?
I do a lot of, I had gotten into doing a lot of teaching in California when I was there. I was there for 24 years or so. Wow. And I ended up being a music director for two schools out there, one in Agoura Hills and one in Studio City. And I had a lot of great students and honestly changed my life, you know, being able to kind of give back all these blessed experiences I kind of got to live through, and to kind of give that back and help some people who might be quitters, be believers, you know, and I got kids now that are honestly playing Lollapalooza and Coachella and all sorts of fun stuff. So they're now grown up. I've been doing it for 14 years. So I do some of that while I'm at home and stuck inside. I can do some mentorship and reach out, you know, to young entertainers. I have an artist development company called Chasing Life, chasinglife.com. If anybody's ever looking out there to expand or whatever, but yeah, I do a little of that, and I can do music right here. I can record stuff for people. I do custom songs, and I still sing and still put out music and all that fun stuff.
That's
whatever
great.
I can get my hands into.
Yeah, oh yeah, keep yourself busy. That's for sure. Yeah, it's been it's just been one of those weeks, and with things, we'll talk about it in the news, but lots of things are starting to reopen. So I've been having to like get myself the energy again to get out of the house and go cover things here in Orlando. So I've been out to Island H2O Live already. I went out to I went to Disney Springs to walk around just to see what that was like and go grab some Earl, because I've missed my Earl sandwich so much. it's been nice to see how things have been going. And in some ways, we'll talk about in news, I was not, things weren't as I expected. We'll talk about that in a little bit. So yeah, things are starting to ramp up in my life here with all the reopenings, and especially with Universal this week. I'm sure I'll probably be out there for that reopening.
I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say, because my kids can't wait to get back out there and hug some princesses. And I it might be a while before that happens. So
right.
I can't wait to hear what your experience is on that for sure.
Now, Oliver, my 2-year-old, is like really dying to get back out there and see Mickey again. Like, he wants to see Mickey. So it's hard, but hopefully sometime soon we'll get some kind of experience like that. Well, with that, we're going to go ahead and jump right into news in the queues, because we got a lot to talk about. So Brittany, what we got with this week's news in the queue?
Well, we've got a corporate shakeup kind of going on at Disney. An entire new leadership team for the Disney Parks Experiences and Products Division. While Disney World's already lost Josh DeMaro in record time. The former president of Walt Disney World is now the chairman of Disney Parks Experiences and Products, which is wild. I literally was just there for Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway opening, and he was there, and now he's like top guy now. A bunch of other people moved around. How do you pronounce Jeff's last name?
Vale, I believe.
Vale? Okay, I didn't want to butcher it. Jeff Vale, who I believe used to run Disney Vacation Club, is now the president of Walt Disney World. Ken Potrock, who was president of Consumer Products, is now president of the Disneyland Resort. Rebecca Campbell, who was president of Disneyland Resort, is now the chairman of Direct to Consumer and International, so she's in charge of Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. Kareem Daniel, who was former president of Walt Disney Imagineering Operations, Product Creation, Publishing, and Games, where are the games at, has been named president of Consumer Products, Games, and Publishing. And Thomas Malzoom, who was senior VP of Resort and Transportation Operations at Walt Disney World, is now the president of Disney Signature Experiences, so DVC and Adventures by Disney.
Mm-hmm. Now, there was one person I think I saw who left Disney altogether to become like the COO of TikTok, I think.
Kevin Mayer, he's been an executive at Disney for a really long time. He used to be the chairman of DTC, and he left to be the COO of ByteDance, which owns TikTok.
Okay.
And he's now the CEO of TikTok.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a difference between Disney and TikTok, but you know, I'm honestly really excited though for Josh DeMaro. As much as I loved him as the president, and he was an excellent Disneyland president, and from what I was seeing, he was going to be an amazing Walt Disney World president, and he was for 6 months. But you know, to see him now in charge of all the parks, and kind of replacing Bob Chapek, I think is an excellent idea. He is the cast member's president. He really truly cares about not only the guests but the cast as well. So I think he's going to be an excellent overseer of the parks.
I can't wait to see the kind of changes he instills, and hopefully some developments for cast members, different opportunities, and I don't know, offerings for them. I feel like so much positive change can be made with this move.
Mm-hmm. I'm just checking in the chat here. Everyone is saying hello to you, Jason.
We'll get to some of those in a minute here. I'm scared to push any buttons here. I'll probably end up in some other website. I'll trust you guys. I'll take your lead on it.
You got it. What's next, Brittany?
All right. Next up, Disney Springs has reopened.
Yes.
And we were there safely and social distancedly to check it out. So Disney Springs opened on May 20th for the first time in 2 months, 60 days. A select number of venues were open and guests were allowed to park in either lime or orange, pick your team. And there were face masks required, temperature screenings, physical distancing enforced. And from Theron's report, it seemed to be pretty okay. It seemed to be safe and clean and everyone was following the rules for the most part, but, we won't get into that thing that went around on Twitter. With the hot dogs.
I know everyone's probably seen that hot dog post.
So a handful of restaurants have opened, not all of them, mostly at two or three third party, and a handful of Disney owned locations will be opening on the 27th. So in just a few days. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I saw Theron in his report say was that he watched a bench get cleaned a number of times in a 15-minute span.
Oh, yeah, I think he said 7 or 8 times.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess he must have tweeted that. But I that's great.
Yeah.
That you can actually see that be evident while you're in Disney Springs.
Yeah, I mentioned earlier, I went to Disney Springs for about 30 minutes to go. I parked at Lime, went straight to Earl of Sandwich, got food, and then left. But I was kind of taking my time walking through because I wanted to see how everything was. And I was really impressed by what I saw. There weren't a huge number of people there. Just because it's open, the crowds didn't come rushing out. So, like, it seems like people are realizing that, you know, let's keep it to just people who need to go and buy things. Let's not just walk around. Although you can walk around if you feel like it, because there is plenty of open space. I saw people staying far away from each other. The line at Earl of Sandwich was done very well with markers on where to stand. And the checkout process was quick and easy and contactless. So I was really, really happy with what I saw that Disney's doing. And if this is a precursor of what they're going to do in the parks, I think Disney has a good formula of how to do this.
I'm so glad to see it go well, because I know you and I have talked endlessly about how nervous we were to see what the parks would do and how they would keep guests and cast members safe and do like Disney look and everything with the masks. I saw that guest relations have their own like custom masks with little bug tags on the side, which I thought was cool. They posted a picture. It was a press photo. But it was a very nice mask. It was like, oh, fancy. Mm-hmm. But it just seems overall very safe. And I thought it was interesting that they used the do not stand and the stand here signs, where we talked about that a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the giant signs that tell you don't stand on this sign. Which you got those with like the temperature screenings and in lines in front of World of Disney and things like that. But then Earl had their own signs that say stand on this sign. So I can see how that can get a little confusing for guests. Do I stand on the sign? Do I not? Don't stand on the sign. I understand that, but it seemed like everyone was very cooperative and knowledgeable about how to do it. Jason, what have you been thinking about everything that you've been seeing so far?
I've just been kind of watching, you know, Disney Twitter go amok, and just different people, you know, comment. And my, you know, my wife's very nervous about it. Of course, taking two kids on a plane to get there and stuff. So, you know, just hearing your take on that is very comforting. You know, you always wonder if it's like medical theatrics, or are they really, you know, making a difference. So it sounds like they're really you know, going strong on it. So that sounds good.
I think this is going to be, you know, we say this a lot, the new normal. It may not be permanent, but it's definitely going to be something that we're going to be used to for a little more time to come. And I'm perfectly fine with it. The processes I went through were very quick and easy, especially the temperature screening. It took like 2-3 seconds to take my temperature and I was moving. And there was no line at all when I went. So I guess it's either a testament of very few people coming or how fast they're going. I don't know. We could see this week with Memorial Day happening, you know, this week, maybe more people are going to show up and we'll see longer lines. I'm not sure. I might try to go out there on the 27th to see World of Disney's opening and see what's going on. So we'll post about all that on our Twitter.
That one I'm particularly interested in because they'll have the glass walls up and the various markers for lines and everything. Very interested to see how that goes.
Yeah, Rodney in our chat says hopefully the cleanliness continues and doesn't fade away. I hope so too. I hope that they stay on top of the cleaning for a lot longer time to come than just right now, for sure.
All right, next up, something I'm very excited about. Muppets Now got a premiere date for Disney Plus.
Yes, it did.
July 31st, and I'm super hyped about it.
I'm glad to finally see some Muppet content for Disney Plus.
Yes. I'm so sad that series that Josh Gad was working on got canned because it sounded awesome. But this also sounds very fun and kind of tongue in cheek, very self-aware, which I love when the Muppets kind of tackle that.
Well, it's unscripted, correct?
Yes, but there is a premise to it. Okay. So, in this, it's 6 episodes, and if it hasn't changed since they originally announced it, they're short form. And in the show, Scooter is in charge of streaming for the Muppets, and he has a new series that he has to deliver and upload on time to meet his deadline, and it's now. He will need to overcome whatever obstacles, distractions, and complications the rest of the Muppets throw his way, and that's like the setting of the show. And then everything else that the Muppets do is whatever they want, and it sounds terrifying and hilarious.
Any original content from the Muppets is a-okay in my book, especially things like this, where it's kind of like the Muppet Show. It's a behind the scenes of a show that they're trying to put on. I like that format.
I like that they kind of put Scooter in a similar role, but kind of modernized it to a more current type of deal. Mm-hmm. And after seeing Gonzo in prop culture, I'm ready for anything that they've got to throw at us.
Did the Muppets ever make any sort of appearances on Mickey Mouse Club back then?
No, they had just kind of started. They had just moved into we were in the park before anybody, obviously. But then at some point they started filming next in one of the stages. So as kids, of course, I grew up watching that show. It was an inspiration to watch the musical guests come on that show as a kid. So, you know, walking into that, we would sneak about all sorts of places, but we would sneak over there when we knew they were all over there. And even later in life, I've become friends with many of the voiceover guys. And in fact, one of the girls was on the show in 7th season. She played the mom for Brittany, I believe, and even Christina a couple times. And she now is Abby Cadabby.
Oh, no way.
That's cool. Right?
Which is obviously not Muppets, but it is. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So sick. And to be honest, I'm so sick of seeing Sesame Street. I'm so ready for like the Muppets
because we need more Muppets.
My kids are like watching Sesame Street all the time, and it's just like, oh man, you know, I need some Beaker, and I need some, you know.
the Muppets have a great sense of humor to them that can be enjoyed both by kids and adults, because there's always some joke that will fly over the kids' heads and hit the adults right in the center of their head.
I wish they would put The Muppet Show on Disney Plus.
Is that not on Disney Plus?
No.
Oh. Yeah, they got a lot of stuff they need to put on Disney
Plus. They do. And I've never seen it. And Josh raves about it. Josh is my boyfriend. And I would love to watch it because I love The Muppets. And I feel like that would be super the kind of thing where the jokes fly over the kids' heads. But like they would nail my brain. And I would think it was super funny.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So good. It was so good growing up. It was the best.
So keep an eye out for that on Disney Plus on July 31st. Next up, Banks was there for this. Island H2O Live Water Park reopened yesterday. with the day that we're recording this, May 23rd, with some new safety guidelines. So what was that like? Did you actually get to go in, or?
I went in for about 10 minutes and turned around and walked out.
Okay.
It was not a good experience.
So
let me say, I love this little water park. We live literally 5 minutes away from it. We have annual passes to this water park. We've been going since it opened. It's a nice little place to take my kids to. I wanted to go there to see, you know, how are they handling these new guidelines, so maybe I can bring Spencer out to play there. Maybe I just went in a bad time. I don't know. I'm probably going to go back out tomorrow just to see. But of course, Memorial Day, it could be busy again, but it was very crowded. People in lines were not really staying apart very far. No one was wearing masks, which I half expected, because they do tell you you cannot wear masks on the rides themselves, but they do encourage you to wear them around the park. No one was doing that, though. The gift shop said they had a maximum occupancy of 8 people. There's double that when I walked by there. And so I was just kind of like, maybe it's just the first day, maybe, I don't know. I couldn't tell if it was an operations thing or if it was just the guests not caring. But I was kind of disheartened with what I saw on the first day, but I am going to give them a chance to kind of, you know, get things going and get used to the things. I'm going to go back sometime this week and see if things are different. Although I've heard reports from people who were there on the first day that they saw everyone practicing social distancing and everything was fine on their end. So I just may have caught a bad hour. I'm not sure, but I'll definitely go back and give them another chance.
That is disappointing to hear, because I have been super curious how water parks are going to handle this whole thing in general.
Yeah.
With the masks and everything, because that's like a safety hazard, wearing them on the rides and the water and the pools and stuff. And they seemed to have a really good reopening plan. They had a COVID-19 response team, mm-hmm. and cleaning and disinfecting everything on a regular basis, social distancing of all their chaises and everything, wellness checks for all of their team members. It seemed good. And then I saw your post on Twitter.
Well, I will say, like, the employees I saw were doing the best that they could. They were wearing their masks. They were still doing like the bag checks, and they were doing not temperature screenings, but they were asking guests, hey, have you had these symptoms? Have you been in contact with anyone? So that was the guest temperature screening. But yeah, far apart. Those were nice. They had signs, plenty of signs around the park. That was no problem whatsoever. The communication of the rules was very good. I just think it was the guests that aren't just giving it, being very serious about it. That's what it seemed like.
And with water parks, that's hard, because you're asking someone to bring their whole family, bring masks to wear, but then take them off and make sure you put them away before you get in the water, and then put them right back on. That seems tough, and I could see a lot of parents just being like, yeah, whatever, and not doing it anyway.
It's probably a combination of first day plus Memorial Day weekend, so everyone wants to get out of the house. So, yeah, I definitely want to go back and see how things are going again, because I'm not going to judge it on the first day of it being reopened. So we'll see. We'll see. Jason, did you ever get to go to this water park?
I have not. I've seen it. I've driven by it a couple of times. I want to go really bad. As you can see, I'm very pasty. And I heard that park didn't have a lot of shade, so I got nervous. I just haven't been there. Okay. And so I'm curious. What is your opinion on that?
It does not have a lot of shade. It honestly does not. There's a few areas, like by the wave pool and by the kids area, that have shades, but it's not even just like umbrellas. It's like those big giant triangular colored shades that don't really cover the sun if it's like a certain time of day. So it is a very bright park, especially the concrete makes it even brighter than it is. So yeah, compared to like Typhoon Lagoon, Blizzard Beach, yeah, there's like 90% less shade.
I've heard nothing but great things about the way they do the systems and stuff there, though. I've heard a lot of compliments on that, and people told me.
Oh no, yeah.
I'm just worried about walking out of there and hating myself later. You know. lobster.
that's happened to us several times. But yeah, we love the place. It's got a lot of great stuff for the kids and for everyone. Some really cool thrills and we like supporting them. But I hope to see a little bit better next time I go for sure.
Next up, this is kind of still developing. But Legoland announced that it will open on June 1st. So here's the thing. Last week, the Orange County Economic Recovery Commission and the Polk County Commission for Legoland Florida specifically met, and local attractions and major attractions like Universal Orlando submitted plans for reopening to be approved by the committee and then by their respective mayors. And then it would go to the Florida governor to get final approval. And that's what allows them to reopen. So Legoland submitted their plan. And to my understanding, it's been approved by the Polk County Commission and Winter Haven's mayor, Bradley T. Dantzler, but it has not been approved by Governor DeSantis yet. So they're saying that it's official, but the governor's office, according to the Orlando Sentinel, says that they're kind of jumping the gun a little bit. But anyway, their plan is pretty, you know, pretty well explained. So guests before they arrive are encouraged to download the park's official app and review the website ahead of arriving. And they should be prepared to make on-site purchases using credit or debit, as cash will not be accepted on property, which is interesting because Universal Orlando is allowing cash, but Legoland will refuse your cash.
Maybe it's because they're a smaller park. I don't know.
Yeah. Once you arrive to the park will only open to 50% capacity. If guests are arriving by car, they will leave one or two spaces they didn't specify between each vehicle. And all park employees and guests will be required to undergo non-invasive temperature checks with the 100.4 degrees Fahrenheit threshold to be allowed in or not. You will also not be allowed in if you have coughing or difficulty breathing, traveled internationally or on a cruise ship in the past 2 weeks, been in a location with widespread virus transmission in the last 2 weeks, or close contact with someone known or suspected of having the virus, or tested positive in the last 2 weeks. Standard stuff.
Yeah, there's we're very excited. Legoland is my daughter's favorite park. Period. She adores that park. We have had passes for years. We love going out there, and I plan on being out there on June 1st to see how things are going. So I'm a little. If, you know, they're not requiring the masks like Universal,
yeah,
and most likely Disney will, they're encouraging it. So I'm not sure if we're going to see the same thing like we did at Island, but at the same time, that was a water park. This is a full theme park. I'm sure that there will be people still wearing masks, especially because they are going to hand out complimentary masks for those who want one, which is good to hear. I'm very interested to see how everything works, especially their reservation system for the rides, because they're going to be doing virtual queuing, basically.
And they'll also have your expected signage throughout the park, but it'll be Lego themed, which will be fun. They've suspended character meet and greets and some attractions that can't be operated due to social distancing recommendations. Their dining locations have been rearranged to kind of accommodate that 6 feet distance. And there will be limited capacity inside the park's indoor stores and restaurants. And certain areas like water fountains, select restaurants, stores, and some attractions will likely be temporarily closed to help enforce these measures.
It's finally time to see the big guns opening up their parks and yep, seeing how things work out. So I'm very intrigued and excited and maybe just a smidge worried, but I'm sure they're going to do the best that they can.
Yeah. It's all just about kind of trusting them that they know what they're doing and the decisions that they're making, and then showing up on the day that it opens and see how it all goes.
Exactly. Jason, did you ever make it out to Legoland or taking your kids out there?
I have not. So I'd love that you said you love it. So I would love to take my kids out there and experience that. So I have not gone.
Yeah, it is a kids park. Like they always say that Legoland is built for kids 2 to 12, and it definitely shows. Like Spencer and Oliver love the Duplo area. Spencer has gotten a lot of her first rides at Legoland in terms of like roller coasters and things like that. So it's definitely a great place to take the kids to kind of build them up to bigger and bigger thrills for sure. And we can't wait to go back and see how things are done.
It's even fun for adults too.
Especially if you love Legos. There's so much to look at in this park, and the Cypress Gardens area is just one of the most beautiful places to walk in Florida.
And it sounds like they're doing everything they can. I almost don't trust the people coming more than I trust the establishments. You know, exactly. Have you been on a cruise? Have you been on a cruise lately? No, not me. You hope people are being honest for sure.
It's the absolute truth, especially, and that's why the reasons why I'm like, I kind of wish they're requiring the masks and not encouraging, because when you encourage, I think that's just a green light for some people to be like, I don't have to wear it. Wee.
Yep. We'll see what happens. Another big gun is opening. Universal Orlando has gotten the official okay. They've gotten the approval from the Orange County Economic Recovery Task Force, Mayor Jerry Demings, and Ron DeSantis to open to guests on June 5th, but to open in general on June 1st. Their plan is extensive. I'm not kidding. I listened to that meeting for like 2 hours. It's huge. It's very well planned out. They've thought of pretty much everything. So on June, they'll open it on a timeline. So June 1st and 2nd, they will open to a team member preview so that they can test out all of their new rules and procedures and stuff. And then June 3rd and 4th, a limited number of guests and the APs will be invited to experience this phased reopening preview, and then June 5th is when the parks will reopen to the public. Universal said that they would continue to manage daily attendance, so there will be some kind of cap, but they did not say what percentage they were capping the park at. Annual pass holders will be among the first to visit, so I would imagine they get invited to that June 3rd, June 4th dates. But if you're an AP, just keep an eye on your email. They'll probably send you something. So the main tenets of Universal's plan is that they wanted to ensure safety with how guests arrive at the park, how they interact with other guests at the park, how they experience attractions, rides, and shows, and how they have meals. So many forms of contact. And some of these new procedures include guests and team members being required to wear face masks and observe social distancing. Theme park guests and team members will be required to have temperature checks with that same 100.4 degrees threshold. Kids under the age of 2 won't have to wear a mask. And if you have a disability that prevents you from wearing a mask, guest services will accommodate you, which is nice. That's the first park I've seen to mention that at all. Let's see. If you don't have a face covering, they will sell them at a merchandise cart in City Walk, just past the screening area. So you can pick one up if you're coming in and you don't have one, which is nice.
Yeah. And I've heard I think they even said at some point in the future, they'll have themed ones.
Yes. In the weeks to come.
Sure they will.
King Kong.
King Kong. Grinch, I'm sure, will be one of them.
Oh, I hope it's like fuzzy. might not be the best to breathe out of, but it'll look cool. A few other things they're doing: staggered parking, so they'll park your car and then a space, and then they'll park the next car. Managed and reduced daily attendance and ridership, show attendance and restaurant seating. Some areas and events may be closed. Increased cleaning and disinfection of food locations, ride vehicles, restrooms, and other high touch points. Social distancing throughout the parks. Use of virtual lines. Hello.
There we go. Virtual queues.
Cashless payments and no touch policies where possible. All dining menus converted to single use so they can be discarded when you're finished. Mobile food and drink ordering. Guests will be required to use hand sanitizer before they board ride vehicles, which is wild.
Yeah.
And team members will individually hand out 3D glasses instead of guests picking them up out of the bins themselves. And they release the operating hours for Universal as well. So Universal Studios Florida will be open daily from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Islands of Adventure will be open from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Volcano Bay will be open from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And City Walk will be open from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m.
There we go. And I just checked, and Hagrid's is already at a 5-hour wait.
Oh my god! So. It's not even open.
It's yeah. This will. I mean, I know Legoland is a big park, but I think this is one of the biggest parks to have their reopening in this country. That's for sure. So it's definitely going to be interesting to see how they do it, because there's going to be a lot of guests that are going to want to come, and I'm very excited to see it all worked out.
I feel good about it. They seem to have covered all the bases, and the fact that they're going to have hand sanitizer at the entrance and exit of every ride, store, restaurant, mm-hmm. Social distancing, team members observing it as well. I don't know if they'll have roaming team members, kind of like how Disney Springs has with their cast members to enforce social distancing, but that could be a possibility too. It seems like they're really trying to cover all the bases, and we talked about how we both thought that they would open before Disney would. So this is really, they're kind of setting the stage for how this is going to get handled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I definitely think SeaWorld and Disney are going to look and see how things go with here. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, executives or representatives from Disney and SeaWorld go to Universal to experience it in person, just to kind of see like, all right, what are they doing and what can we do that they're doing?
I'm so interested to see how they load certain attractions, and if they will strictly monitor the hand sanitizing before going on the rides, because that and the 3D glasses being handed out were two unique things that they included in their plan that I thought was interesting.
Yeah, I think my assumption for the hand sanitizer is probably going to be at grouper. So when they group people to like, all right, 3 on row 1, 2 on row 2, maybe that's where you're going to have to do a hand sanitizer before you get on the ride vehicle.
Cause I immediately pictured like Mummy, Hulk, where you're grabbing onto things, mm-hmm. and holding the handlebars and stuff, and how many people touch those things today. I don't even want to think about it. No. But that's great that they have thought about it. And it's so much easier to do that than to have to get a team member or a group of them to sanitize each vehicle between, you know, launches, yeah. Because then that's just going to make weights go through the roof.
I'm just ready to get a Duff beer.
I hope you take a picture and post it. Just like, I'm just here for the Duff.
What are you thinking about all the precautions, Jason? Does it make you like more wary to go and experience the park?
It does, but you know, that's a learning curve, I'm sure. And I do like your idea, if they haven't already, of the executives kind of sharing knowledge. You know, this isn't a competition kind of thing at this point. This is more like, usually if someone comes into town as a vacationer or a tourist, they might hit multiple parks. So if one person's sick at one park, they're going to bring it to the next park. So it would make sense that they all kind of have a similar, you know, tactic to handle in a situation, I'm sure.
But yeah,
they might already be on the same page. You know, we don't know, I guess, but that was a smart idea, I thought, when you said that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope that they do that. And you know what? It turns, sometimes with things we talk about on this podcast end up happening. So we're gonna reel this into existence.
And it's always right before we upload it.
Now, Brittany, I don't know. I don't know if I saw or the details, or if you know, is Universal opening up any of their hotels? Because I know Legoland's opening up their hotels.
They didn't say. They said that their plans for the hotels are still being formulated at this point, but we should hear something soon.
It's probably because their hotels are owned by Lowe's and Legoland's are theirs. So yeah. That's probably a reason why.
So I would imagine soon, but probably after that June 5th date.
Exactly.
All right. The last bit of news, this happened today, or it was kind of late last night, I believe, when it came out. So there was a rumor that the NBA was considering moving their HQ to Orlando. And turns out it's true. They are in talks with the Walt Disney Company to restart their season at Disney's ESPN Wide World of Sports Complex.
Which I think that's an excellent idea.
So this would, they would restart their 2019-2020 season in late July, if this goes through, at the complex, with that serving as their home base, basically, for games, practices, and for team housing. Mm-hmm. The games would likely be televised, but play without live audiences. And I don't know if you guys have watched sports without live audiences. I only watched WrestleMania this year, and it didn't have a live audience. It was really weird.
This one, you're just going to hear the ball bouncing and then the squeaks of the shoes.
It's such a strange thing, because they don't fake it, or at least with WrestleMania, they had it at the training center, and they didn't put any fake crowd noise or music or anything, but they mic'd all of the wrestlers, so you could hear them talking to each other while they were performing, and it was so strange. So I can only imagine what other sports would be like without a crowd. But this is huge for the area, to have NBA come, and Disney and the NBA already have a good relationship, you know, evidenced by the NBA experience at Disney Springs. So now we're just kind of waiting for this to become official, I guess.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm not a basketball person, but it's nice to see some semblance of normalcy be regained with the sports industry, because, you know, a lot of sports, I think, like basketball, I think hockey, were really affected by all this and the stopping of all these games. So it's nice to see they're going to try and finish out the season and bring all these teams to one location. I think I saw someone on Twitter post a thread of like where each team should stay at Disney based on their themes. So like Memphis should stay at New Orleans, and
that's awesome.
That
I love this idea. I think it's great. I hope that, I definitely hope they do that. It'll bring a lot of attention to that area that I'm not sure gets used enough, you know? So a lot of people kind of get turned on to that whole facility. It'd be great.
Yeah, not a lot of people actually know the ESPN Wild World Sports is a thing. It's a big place for those of us who do Run Disney, because all the Run Disney Expos are held there, and a lot of youth sports around the country go there to do their tournaments. But yeah, not a lot of casual sports fans around the country know that this kind of facility exists. So just to get that out there and get more people to maybe even come and do their tournaments here. And they had the Invictus Games at the complex back in 2016, I believe. So it's definitely been held on a large scale before.
We're due. Time to do something there. Let's get something big.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That'd be a lot of fun. I'm a basketball guy, so I would love to see that.
I wonder if they would let people come and watch once it's all safe and everything.
Yeah, like spread the seats out in the stadium, and then like practice social. And I'm sure that's something that they could really do. And, you know, they can make money, obviously, by selling the tickets, for sure. So, you know, if that's something that they feel they could easily do, I don't see why they shouldn't.
So stay tuned for that, because that could be happening.
All right. Well, that is going to do it for our news. So at this point, we move on to our main attraction. And this week, if you are not aware, Jason here is with us. I mentioned at the top of the show, he is from the All New Mickey Mouse Club that aired on the Disney Channel back in the 90s. And this was a big part of my growing up, because I was born in 86 and I was watching Disney Channel all through the 90s. So this show was a huge part of my life, especially because as a Disney fan, this was one of the few ways that I had to get back to Walt Disney World, because the whole series was shot at the Disney MGM studios and the soundstage is there. So Jason, let's talk a little bit about the early days. So how did you become aware of this show and audition for this show?
Oh my goodness. I'll try to speed through it as quick as possible. It's quite a fun story. It's actually, I did not audition for the show.
Oh,
I auditioned for a movie called Why Because We Like You, that was going to be about the original Mouseketeers, and I got the role of Lonnie, and they had a call back in California, and it was, you know, they had a little small group of kids. And at that time, in around 88, 89, which you probably don't remember because you were such a young little tyke, there was a huge writer's strike. And it was almost kind of like what it is now, where everything just kind of stopped. And there, you know, the David Letterman, all the late shows, all these, everything was on rerun. And so everything just stopped. Hollywood stopped. But at the same time, Disney's such a big company. They're saying, well, you know what? We're going to continue and do our theme park that we're doing here. And there's, so they were going to do MGM Studios. And of course they needed a live-in studio. They needed a live-in, you know, show that was on set that stayed there. So they built this monstrosity of a set that most TV shows would never get, especially for their first season. Mostly because it was serving two purposes. It was for the tour that would come through and watch the filming so they could see a live studio being filmed. But also a show for the Disney Channel. And I think they were a little bit surprised hearing all the feedback that I got throughout the years that it took off the way it did, because it was a subscription-based company back then. Disney, you know, was all subscriptions. So they could tell how popular something was by, you know, the subscriptions would go up, you know, during that week or during a free week, you know, they would get all the ratings on that. And the show just really took off, you know, it really related to a lot of kids across the United States, and people who, you know, there was somebody for everybody. And, you know, I kind of talk about this, that Disney was so far ahead of their time, even in the 70s, when they kind of did a little remake of the Mickey Mouse Club then that didn't really go too far, but they introduced African-Americans at that point, and they started to kind of build that idea. So by the time they got to us in the 90s, we kind of little had one of everybody, you know, short, tall, fat, skinny, you know, no teeth, buck teeth. And there was somebody, you know, there was somebody in front of that TV set that you could find someone to relate to if you were watching the show, you know, whether, no matter what race or religion you were or what you looked like. And that's, I think that was really the kind of special touch. And it's kind of cool now and to be kind of diverse and inclusive, but they were doing that so far back, and really, you know, we kind of got to grow up in this atmosphere and grow up in the theme park, for God's sakes, which was kind of a dream in itself.
Yeah. I was gonna ask. You know, last year y'all held the 30th anniversary for the show at Walt Disney World, this big awesome party that was kind of in conjunction with MegaCon, and I was there reporting for Attractions Magazine. I asked all of you that were in attendance this question, but I wanted to ask you again here for those who may not have seen that video. What were some of the fun things that you were doing in the park between tapings?
Man, you know, we spent so much time there. So we would come there at 6-7 in the morning. We'd start school. We had to have a maximum of 3 hours a day for school. But, you know, we were doing a show a day, which is kind of unheard of. It's almost like a soap opera. So, you know, if we were going to do a show later tonight, we would be rehearsing the show for tomorrow this morning. But we would also have to do 3 hours of school. We'd have to learn the choreography and pre-record the music for tomorrow. But then the audience is going to get loaded in, and we have to do the show today that we rehearsed yesterday. So our minds were, it was really an incredible training ground, and kind of, you can see how some, you know, huge superstars came out of that, just because it was just kind of a constant thing. But yeah, we were kids. So we would, you know, we would just, hey, I'm going to leave school for a second. I'd tell my teacher, hey, I'm going to go get a bagel at the craft services. I'll be right back. And then, you know, of course, Damon and Albert would meet me out there, and all of a sudden we'd be riding the Great Movie Ride. Or At one point, we found a back door, because our trailers used to be on what is now Pixar Street. That used to be off limits.
Yeah.
And so we, at one point, we found a door that got us in, you know, to the Great Movie Ride from the back, you know. And, you know, we would sneak around, and no one ever saw us. And then we opened the door, and then there we are in the gangster room. So we would just pose, you know, and then some people would go by. But, you know, obviously, thank God we didn't walk into the fire scene, the Western scene or anything. But we would do silly stuff like that and ride the rides and then run back to school real quick, or, you know, go get a girl's phone number real quick and then run back to school or run back in, you know. But it was, we were pretty innocent looking back. You know, it was a good group of kids, and we had the crew there, and everybody was just very parental and embracing. It was really fun.
I love it. And I do remember going to the park back in the 90s. I think it was on my, what year was that? 93 trip. And I remember going through the backlot tour and going up in the catwalks, and you get to get a bird's eye view of the sets. And I remember seeing the MMC set, and I was so excited to see that. I think at that point it was still the diner set. And yeah, I just love the behind the scenes, like you're filming your show, you're got this huge production. At the same time, you've got all these people that are also like observing from behind the scenes as well,
and you can't see them. Like, so when we first, the first couple seasons, you know, we were not used to that. So being kids, you know, literally you'd be like looking around going, hey man, stop doing that, there's people right there, you know.
Yeah, right. Doing,
you know, like, and like we, you, even in the Foley stage in the recording studio, separate from the stage area, you can still kind of see that building when you walk through to go to Toy Story Land. There was a glass wall there when we'd be in the recording studio, and all of a sudden you would just see like a little silhouette of all these people back there, and you'd be in this room alone singing, and all of a sudden you'd realize that you weren't alone, you know. So you're like, was I just picking my nose or something? Did I do anything weird? <You know? laughs> Is my zipper down? Like, oh my God. It was wild. It was wild, but we got used to it. And, you know, there was always, you know how celebrities are always coming to Disney World or Disneyland and getting kind of, you know, hustled around by, you know, a little helper. And right. So it was kind of the place to go. It was one of the cool places to go in that park at that time. So almost every day there'd be someone sitting on the beach or someone sitting there, you know, from Spock or Harry Anderson, or, I mean, you name it. They were on the Rick Moranis, you know, Pee Wee Herman. I mean, I can go down the list, and Bill Murray. I mean, I can go down the list of people I remember running into back there, and just wild, wild memories as a kid. You know, you're just like, oh my God.
Yeah, and it definitely felt like the production used the park to its full advantage, because there were things that were shot around the parks, around the resort as well, right?
They gave us full reign of wherever we wanted to shoot. They just, you know, whatever you guys, if we did a segment, they just have it approved, and we'd be in Canada filming a scene in Canada over there in Epcot, or we'd be on a boat out there in Bay Lake doing stuff, a video or something. Yeah, now, it was fun.
I want to know, because you were on seasons 1 through 4, and then you came back for season 7. Season 4, though, you and 4 others broke off and formed The Party. Now, where did the origin for The Party come from?
I think they kind of overheard us talking in the back, and that we were kind of wanting to do that. You know, we were teenagers just kind of dreaming big. Like, we're going to do this. We're going to do that. And they had just started Hollywood Records. So, again, you know, hey, why not we just move some of these guys over here and see what we got? And they had just bought the Queen catalog, but they hadn't signed any bands yet. So we were the first band signed to Hollywood Records. Was the
Party. Wow.
Wow.
And that was a joy, just because in a way it was new for them too. So they were literally just throwing things at the wall. Like, what do you want to do? Who do you want to work with? And we'd say, well, you know, let's see what they say. You know, let's see what they say, guys. Hey, let's work. We want to work with Dr. Dre, you know, and they'd go, okay, hold on. Let's get him on the line. And we'd be in a conference call with Eazy-E or, you know, Suge Knight or some, you know, really wild people. And I thought, this is really wild. But Hollywood Records was obviously Disney, but it let us get away with a number of other things and be kind of more adult and kind of get out into the world. But again, at that time in the early 90s, the Mickey Mouse Club was still subscription based, and it still had it wasn't a pop manufacturing company. So when we went out, people didn't give us the respect of like, oh, you're on the Mickey Mouse Club. That's cool. That got earned later, you know. And when we were first doing it, they'd give our CDs to radio stations with blank covers, and they'd go, oh, this is good. And then later on, they'd say it was a Disney band, and they're like, ah. Oh. Because if it was a Disney band, they didn't want to play it automatically. And throughout the years, you know, Britney, Christina, Ryan Gosling, all these people kept hitting. And they were like, you know what? Okay, there's something with the Mickey Mouse Club. So finally, it's gotten its, you know, its respect. But even when I went back to Hollywood, they made me take it off my resume.
Oh, wow.
My manager. And that happened to a number of the Mouseketeers. Kerry Russell. I mean, a number of them had it off their resume for a long time.
Yeah. Isn't
that weird?
Yes, it is so weird. And you mentioned some of the names, and I want to mention, for those who don't know, some of the big names that came out of the Mickey Mouse Club in the 90s: Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, Justin Timberlake, JC Chavez, Kerry Russell, Ryan Gosling, Dee Dee Magno-Hall, Orana Bennett, and Nikki DeLoach, just a few of the people that are doing huge things nowadays.
Absolutely. Yeah, and honestly, each one is as, you know, talented as the next. It's just, you know, where they've ended up. It's amazing to kind of watch, and any one of them could, you know, pop in another day. Like there was 30 something Mouseketeers, I think, total, and so many talented ones. And we'd be there, and if you wanted to learn something from somebody else, we were all kind of the best at what we did, where we came from, because we were from all over, you know. Mm-hmm. And then we got in this room. They kind of stuck us in this room together, and we were like, oh wow, I'm not so good of a dancer as I thought I was. You know? So, like, and you know, being in that atmosphere, you know, when you're around someone who's better than you or good at something, it just, you know, you pick up on it. Like when you go golfing with somebody who golfs really good, all of a sudden you're hitting them straight and you're like, I don't know what's happening, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's really, I think, what kind of helped build all these performers. And it was a fun atmosphere. It never felt like work, but we constantly built each other up and supported each other to this day, you know?
Yeah, no, I definitely feel like there's, you know, especially seeing the event last year, everyone is still very much in touch and friends with one another. Who are you still really close with that you see on a pretty regular basis?
Because I'm not in LA anymore, I'm not seeing them on a regular basis, but I'm in touch with so many of them because I did the executive producing of that the event last year. We're still trying to find fun things to get our hands into, so we're in contact with pretty much all of them. But I talked to Tony a lot. I talked to Dale. Of course, Damon Pamplina, my right-hand man, he's been there since day one. So, Dee Dee, in the past week, I've just literally talked to those guys alone, you know, but all of them. And even when Justin comes in town, you know, I'll hit him up and say, hey man, I hear you're playing. Do you know a guy? sure enough, there he is, open arms, you know, making sure nobody else is, you know, everybody else has to wait before he gives me a hug. He's the sweetest, you know. Some of these guys, they really are. And it's attributed, knowing all of these Mouseketeers and seeing them grow up now that I'm 45 years old, I can tell you it's attributed to their families and how they grew up, mm-hmm. and their morals and kind of, you know, their character. They all have great families. Like I said, it was a great bunch, but our families were the ones that picked up everything and brought us to Florida without really knowing what was going to go on, you know, and made that sacrifice. And they're kind of the winners for sure.
Yeah. I do want to throw up Sarah's comment here. You were her crush growing up. Still throwing the party in and sing along. Much love. I speaking of crushes, I don't think I've ever mentioned this publicly, but I got to admit, one of my first crushes as a kid was Dee Dee. Like I was in love with Dee Dee growing up, and I just love seeing, like, I did not put two and two together until we were about halfway through binging Steven Universe. And then I was like, Pearl, Dee Dee's Pearl. Like, oh my God. Like it was a cool little full circle moment for me. She just seems like she's the best.
She is the best. And it's amazing watching this whole new generation of people kind of, you know, experience Dee Dee for the first time, because they don't know anything about the Mickey Mouse Club or the party. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they love her for Pearl, and they love that she sings as Pearl, and they're kind of finding their way back to the party and having fun with that, listening to her, you know, rap and do fun stuff. Cause it's like, what, you know, in fact, there's a number of YouTube videos. People have taken the party stuff and put Pearl to it. And it's pretty fun.
I know.
Yeah, our whole family love that show. So I want to ask, there's, you know, the MMC was very skit heavy. There was a lot of fun skit and things like that. Were you guys involved in coming up with the ideas for that? And what were some of the favorite ones that you did?
Early on, we weren't. I think the writers just kind of watched our personalities and just kind of would see what they could get away with us, you know, and see the kind of the range of different people. Some people were more singing, you know, oriented. Some people were more dancing oriented. Some people were more acting oriented. But yeah, throughout the seasons, we would throw ideas at the writers, or the writers would come and, you know, pull us aside and go, God, that skit was so bad. Thank you for making it so funny. You know, or like, it's a, and so then they'd pal around with you and ask kind of what you like doing or what you like to do. But yeah, I've done so many of them. Obviously, Professor Wow is the one that I've been talking about lately. That I did a kind of a fun scientist back then, which I thought might be appropriate to bring back during these these days.
Your little teasers on your social.
I'm looking forward to seeing that. Yeah, I'm that bored at home.
So. I saw a comment here. Okay, Jason, favorite party album?
Oof. I'm going to say the last one, The Party's Over, Thanks for Coming.
Oh.
Because they literally just said, you know, here's your budget. You guys go do whatever you want to do.
Oh, nice.
Wow. And it was, we had said, at that point, we said, we think we're winding down. We don't know if this is going to continue. And there's a reason for that. And that's because we were 17 years old, and we didn't realize that everything goes full circle. And we, at that point in life, it was all about the Seattle sound. It was all about, and I was even wearing flannels all the time. Like, I was Pearl Jam, it was Lenny Kravitz, it was Soundgarden, Alice in Chains, you name it. It was all about that sound. And I'm thinking, well, this is what it is now. It's never going to go back to what we're doing, you know. And sure enough, of course it did later on. But we all just said, you know what, I think let's just split our ways and find do some other things for ourselves and see what happens. But the record company, instead of saying, okay, you're out, he said, all right, let's do one more album, and I'll give you guys each a budget, and you guys go do whatever you would have done if you wanted to do it. And so we're like, okay. So I went and did the song Moving On. And I don't know if you know that song, but I still play it live. But it's one of my favorite tunes, and it kind of speaks to me as an artist and as a writer. So we did start to write songs towards the end, so that's important. And honestly, a skill that we didn't have. We were doing all these things as the Mickey Mouse Club. We could sing, we could dance, I could juggle, I could walk a tightrope. But like, you know, I wasn't like skilled on writing songs. I'm like, oh wow, being a writer is an important skill, you know. Mm-hmm. Of course, now with the internet, which we didn't have then, you got to be all sorts of things. You got to be a full entrepreneur. You got to be branding. You got to have a subscription to some sort of graphic design thing. You got to have an app that does this, an app that does that, and it's a handful. But yeah, that's kind of the journey there.
Yeah, and I was really thinking about it. Because, you know, Disney Channel nowadays is so synonymous with like the stars having their own music careers and stuff. Thinking about it, I would think The Party is the first ever band to come out of the Disney Channel.
Yeah. And honestly, they might not even know that.
Yeah.
Because Hollywood Records has changed hands many times over. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they've had many acts go through there, and they might not even know. So this coming up is the 30th anniversary of The Party.
Oh, wow.
And for whatever reason, it is not on iTunes. It's not on any digital distribution. And a lot of fans are like, why don't you release it? Why don't you release it? And I know they don't understand, but Hollywood Records owns those masters. So I would love, if you're listening,
please.
I would love for them to release that. It has been licensed a couple times in different shows throughout the years, but you know, it's fun for a lot of those fans. It's memories for those fans. It's memories for us. And there's over 40 songs. I don't even know if they know what they have in that vault. You know, they have Dr. Dre on that vault. They have Teddy Riley and Stephen Bray, who did Madonna, and Elliot Wolf, who did Paula Abdul. I mean, there's just, and that's what I mean. When they first started this band, they were literally just going, what, you know, let's throw some money at this. Let's do this. Let's do this. Let's do this. And they did so many amazing things. It's a shame that it's just collecting dust somewhere and no one gets to hear it, or you have to pay $90 on eBay to get that one CD. Ugh. You know,
oh my God.
We need those released digitally, and we need the Mickey Mouse Club on Disney Plus. Like,
thank
now.
You. Yeah, I'm jealous of the Muppets right now.
I mean, I was born in '94, so I was 2 years old in '96 when it ended. So I would love to watch it. Because I feel like I missed this whole era of Disney Channel, because my, like, growing up, things I remembered were, like, the Disney Afternoon shows, Aladdin, Little Mermaid, that kind of thing. I don't really remember a ton of live action stuff until I was maybe 8 or 9, when Disney Channel original movies really started to take off.
Yeah.
There was no internet too. There was just no internet back then. So it was what people did. They, you know, after school, they went straight to the TV and it was there for him, you know.
I wanted to mention quick about season 7, because you were not on season 5 and 6, but you came back for season 7. What was that decision? And I think Wikipedia said you were one of the co-hosts of that season.
Right. Yeah. I went to LA after we kind of split up The Party a little bit, and I started, you know, dipping my toe into the big pool. And I realized that, like I was telling you, a lot of the managers and agents were telling me to pull Mickey Mouse Club off. So it was almost like we had to reinvent our career and start from the beginning all over again. And of course, we had a lot of talent to back us up, and we were confident. But you're walking in rooms where people already have connections with casting directors and directors and et cetera. And I came close to a lot of parts, and I was, you know, it came back up, and it was pitched and to the Disney Channel in California. And I went in to read and have a little interview with them and talk to them. And they just kind of wanted to see, you know, who I was at this age. And it became a good idea. And I don't know the circumstances. I don't know if Fred was done or if they had some sort of scenario they were going through. But, you know, it was really fun to kind of come back as an adult and you know, obviously be the co-host, which we didn't fulfill that role like Fred Maueva did, or even mm-hmm. Fred and Terry. We didn't do as much as they did as host. It was more of a title, is just kind of mm-hmm. us coming back. I think that was the first time that had ever happened. So yeah, it was awesome, especially to meet those guys. Cause those, the ones we mentioned, the big ones, they literally came up to my waist. You know, I have a funny Jim Carrey skit called Brace Ventura, not Ace Ventura, about braces. He lost his braces or his retainer. And, with Ryan Gosling, and he's literally like, you know, up to my belly button. it lives on YouTube though. It's pretty fun.
I gotta look that up. You mentioned Fred. I want to talk a little bit about Fred Newman, because he is like, he's been around for so long. He's done so many things. What was it like having him on set as one of the adults on for the show?
I attribute a lot of the success of the Mickey Mouse Club absolutely to him. He, you know, he came in seasoned. He knew he'd done children's shows. He knew where he was and how to handle himself. And he was an insanely great mentor to us as children. And of course, with the labor laws and kids laws, our parents were always allowed to be there on set and around, you know, to watch, make sure we were being protected. But mentally, sometimes they weren't there. They were in another room, and you're on set and you're stressing out. And you, like I said, I kind of gave you that schedule that we were going through. And Fred was there to kind of go, or like, you know, just like, you know, just kind of just remind you that this is all crazy and just have fun. This is, you know, such a great experience. And, you know, he was such an important parental figure to all the Mickey Mouse mm-hmm. Club. Any one of them would say that. You say Fred Newman, everybody just gets a smile, you know.
Yeah.
He's very special.
It wasn't until years later, when the internet was invented, that I put two and two together and didn't realize that Fred from the Mickey Mouse Club was Skeeter from Doug. I had no idea.
Yeah, he does the whole sound. He does the whole entire theme song. That's all him. Just,
oh, that's all him too?
It's literally like, I don't know how many tracks of him stacked, of him just doing that. And I want to say, and I could be totally wrong, because I remember hearing it in Jim Henson's house. He used to rent out Jim Henson's house in Florida. When he'd come for the Mickey Mouse Club. So we'd go over there and hang out, you know, in this little kind of cabin. I'm sure it wasn't Jim Henson's only house, but we'd go over there and he'd be recording this stuff, and he was recording it remotely with a guy named Dan Sawyer, who was also on the Mickey Mouse Club as one of the music directors. But yeah, man, those guys are so creative. Oh. You know, so talented.
Listen to it again.
And you'll notice it's all mouth sounds.
Yeah, I knew it. Yeah, I could always tell it was mouth sounds, but I never knew it was just Fred doing it.
Oh, yeah.
That's is crazy.
Crazy.
Someone in the chat had a question here. Your favorite skit?
Oh, wow. Favorite skit. I love doing the Mike and Vic Slick with Damon. Damon, my buddy Damon, who you heard me mention earlier. I'm like a used bike salesman, and my brother... Vic Slick is a night, like a Jay Leno kind of guy, like a host for a night show. All of it's just really random, and that makes no sense unless you know the show. But it was, you know, we would have these reoccurring characters that would come in, and it was always fun to see who you were paired up with for the week. The videos were fun to do too. Like the music videos were fun to do. You know, meeting the musical guests that would come in. I remember when Milli Vanilli came in. like just the random people that would come in that stick in my head are so funny.
Oh my gosh, I just lost my train of thought there.
Sorry, yeah, Milli Vanilli would make anybody lose a finger.
Brittany, go.
Didn't they try to revive the Mickey Mouse Club? They made like a new one. It was not that long ago.
2017. Yeah.
Yeah.
They did. I don't know what happened to it, but
I don't either.
Internet only thing.
I was just thinking about it.
I think Brittany, timing is everything. And I think, I think, you know, again, I don't think they thought the one of the 90s was going to be a hit on the Disney Channel. It was a lot to serve the purpose of being this live-in set in the theme park. You know, they wanted us to work holidays and all that because they wanted us to be there for that. So, you know, I don't know. I think timing is everything. You know, now that kids have the internet and YouTube and stuff, and mm-hmm. people's attention spans are a lot tinier, you know, and so I don't know. It's definitely tough, and that would be hard to recreate. Mm-hmm. I do think it's important. I think they should try to, you know, come up with a way to do that. You know, I talk about it with the guys all the time. We're not under contract anymore, but when we got those jobs, we recognized there was over 100,000 people looked at to get those spots. And when they told us we got those jobs, they told us it was a lifetime job. You know, even though we're not going to get paid for a lifetime, it's still a lifetime. You're lifetime ambassadors to Disney. And that really was important. That really, you know, was instilled in us young. And I think a lot of us still kind of carry ourselves that way.
Okay. Yeah. I have two more questions. And the train just arrived back in the station. I know a few times during the run, there were some original Masketeers that joined. Who did you get to meet and what were they like to in person?
Oh my God. Bobby, Don, Annette. I did a lot of skits with Annette. We did a whole reunion special with Annette and Bobby and those guys and Darlene. Oh no, it was Sherry. Yeah, and Don's gone now. I mean, it's hard. It's hard to watch. It's, you know, Annette's gone. It's hard to watch, you know, people get old for sure, you know.
Yeah.
You know, but we've even told Disney, hey, you know what, we're around to call on us if you ever need us. We'll show up and represent, much like they always did. You know, they'll show up at D23 and be there for that. And you know, it's really special. Bobby was extremely kind to me. I got to tap dance with him a number of times. There used to be a stage next to I think it's now the Beauty and the Beast stage, but it used to be in a different place.
Mm-hmm. The one that was on the Streets of America, right?
Right. It used to be kind of next to the Brown Derby at one point.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
They used to do these interviews every, you know, in the afternoon with celebrities. And I'll never forget going up there and having a tap off with Bobby and having him sign my tap shoe at the end and my mom getting a picture of it. Yeah. It's yeah. We had some really, really special times. And Annette was almost like Dee Dee is to me now, or to a lot of the Mouseketeers. She was very parental, very like, you know, wanted to know if everybody was okay. And is anybody thirsty? Is everybody hydrated? Aww. You know, is everybody, do we need to take a break because we've worked for a while, you know? Just extremely kind, and her husband was so kind. It's, I have great, great memories. I wish we could have had more time with them.
Yeah.
Sure. All of us could.
And you mentioned, you know, telling Disney that y'all are all ready to go. And that's one of the things I loved about last year. You got a pre-parade at the Magic Kingdom to celebrate the 30th anniversary, and hearing the theme song being pumped into the park was just like an instant nostalgic trip. And it was so cool to see everyone out there doing that.
You know, George, I'm going to say his name right, Caligridis, who was the president at that time.
Yeah.
This is a really random story, and I'll give it to you fairly quick, but we didn't know where to do this event, and we didn't know how many people would even show up. So we were looking at, like, places on iDrive and places like B.B. King's. Where are we going to do this? And each one of them would have made it such a different event. All along, we knew we wanted to do it at Disney, and we walked through that pavilion at one point, the showplace. And we were like, this is huge. We could never fill this, right? And at some point, my buddy Kim Dawson, who was a mentor to me, he worked on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, actually. He told me, you know what? You should think about working with a local charity and doing this for charity. I said, we do. We want to do this for charity. He said, you should think about One Pulse. I said, that's a great idea because they represent diversity and inclusion much like we do. Mm-hmm. So Dale, I was like, let me craft this great email to the One Pulse. And my buddy Dale was already on the phone. He already had him on the phone. I loved it. That's the kind of guy he is. He's like, no, I'm going to call him right now. Got him on the phone. They invited us to some random town hall down in the Orlando Repertory Theater down there. And we were like, we didn't know what we were getting ourselves into. We went to a VIP little pre-thing before. And they said, I think you guys need to meet this guy here. I think you guys are from the same family. And I turned around and there was George. And he's on the board of One Pulse. We had no idea. And they said, he's the president of Walt Disney World. And I was just like, I gave him the biggest hug. Like we've known each other forever. And I just spilled my guts to him. I'm like, man, you know, I told him much like I told you, we've been lifetime ambassadors to this company. This is, you know, it only makes sense we do it there. And, you know, is there anything we could do? Is there any kind of help you could give us? And he just kind of sat back and smiled and was like, I got you. We'll make this happen, you know? And they helped us get in the right doors and get all of that. They found some of the set pieces from the old set, which was brilliant. we could have never done that if we would have done it anywhere else. You know what I mean?
Right.
And obviously that parade they did was just amazing. That was so sweet of them to do.
Yeah. And,
you know, that we'll never forget that as Mouseketeers. You know, I can't even tell you.
Yeah, being there at that event and getting photos with those set pieces and seeing Mickey come out in the finale of your whole show and sing the song together, like it was really was a special event that I hope that people who got to go really enjoyed it.
Yeah, we literally just had the anniversary of that show, and they're still doing Zooms and going, they're putting pictures up still about it, and it's special. You know, hopefully we can do that again sometime.
I wanted to show this photo because as we were all talking, I was going through my archives and looking for it. This is a photo from my very first trip to Walt Disney World ever in 1992.
Oh, my God.
With the Mickey Mouse Club backdrop.
Look at you.
Yeah. And I think the party one was right next to that.
Oh.
So there was another backdrop right next to that with the party where like you could pose with the party.
Oh, I don't have one of that.
I wish I had that thing in my living room. Are you kidding? Where is that thing now?
Who are those in the photo there?
Let's see. That's Jennifer, going from left to right. Jennifer, Kevin, and that person in the middle is not a Mouseketeer.
No.
I think that's JC and Lindsay.
Yeah.
And the other ones is a different backdrop.
That's the Adventures in Wonderland.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's awesome.
Yeah.
No, I haven't seen that in so long.
Yeah. I was just going through some old photos recently. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't remember these, but now I do remember these old backdrops. Last question I had, because, you know, being at Walt Disney World, I know some rides and things opened up during the time that y'all were filming there. So were there any sneak peeks that you got to get on attractions? Like I know Tower of Terror opened in 94. So did you get to get sneak peeks?
Oh yeah. We did Star Tours, sneak peek. We actually opened Body Wars. Remember that back in the day?
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Yeah.
with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I remember we were at the ribbon cutting for that one. Tower of Terror. And I remember Tower of Terror. We didn't go on it. They wouldn't let us on it because they were still working through the kinks of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget. I tell this story cause most people don't know. The first couple of rides down without anybody in it, I think they had test dummies in it, they didn't put enough ventilation on the bottom of the shaft that goes down. Mm-hmm. So when it dropped, all the walls blew out because of the amount of air that came down, right?
Oh my
God. They had to make bigger ventilation, you know, openings for the all the air to whoosh out, you know, because the thing comes down and there was no place for all this air to go. So it like damaged the walls. But
Power of Terror for sure.
That was obviously before anybody ever wrote it, of course. And I think they actually tamed it down a number of times, as they did with the Star Tours. You know, they put the cast members on and they were like, okay, it's a little too jerky. And they'd dial it back a little bit, make it perfect before anybody goes on it. But yeah, we did some test dummy rides.
I remember the days of Tower of Terror back, because right now everyone wears a seatbelt, but I remember when it was just one lap bar going across the row. So if you were sitting in a row with a bigger person and you were a kid, you got a little room to fly up.
You better hold on.
Well, Jason, thank you again so much for telling all these amazing stories about the all-new Mickey Mouse Club. Rodney, of course, we got to mention again, Disney Plus. Come on. We need these episodes. We need all the old Disney Channel content on Disney Plus.
That would be awesome.
So if you'll stick around for a minute, Jason, we're going to give some shout outs here to our subscribers. So if you don't know, attractionsmagazine.com, we do have a subscription plan for our magazine, and we want to give a shout out to our new club and VIP subscribers. So shout out to Sarah Bloom, Richard Chinnery, Paulette Edwards, Mickey Gunter, Patricia K. Houlihan, Kristen Kennedy, Randall Moon, Alyssa Pappas, and Deborah Sievers. Thank you guys so much for subscribing to us here at Attractions Magazine. We appreciate your support for sure. Guys in their YouTube live chat, if you want to shoot some shout outs out, we'll get to questions right now. So go ahead and do that. And for those listening to the audio version, once again, we do live stream the recording of the podcast every Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time over at youtube.com/attractionsmagazine. So come and check it out. Rodney says thank you. Yes, thank you, Jason, again for joining us and talking.
Brittany Banks, thanks. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
It's been so fun. I can't imagine what growing up on a theme park lot would have been like.
I even had to for my science class, they sent me a frog from Oklahoma because I was from Oklahoma. So they actually sent me the frog that I had to dissect, and I dissected it on a park bench where is now where you walk into Toy Story Land, you know, along the side of that stage. Our school used to be right there. So I'll never forget. Like that's every time I walk through there, I have this weird memory of like, well, here's where I dissected a frog for my seventh grade class. Who else has that memory?
No one.
That is a unique memory. I think because the show filmed in what is now Toy Story Mania. Was that the soundstage where the show was filmed?
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Yeah. So that, yeah, there was two stages. It used to be in stage one, then it moved to stage three for different seasons. And then of course Toy Story Land was where all the bungalows were and our dressing rooms and all the school and gym and all the, you know, all the fun stuff, choreography class and dance studio.
Yeah, it's a whole different park than it was back in the 90s, that is for sure. That park has seen so much change. Well, thank you again, Jason. We're going to go ahead and say goodnight here. So for those who want to follow us, Brittany, where can people find you on the interwebs?
You can find me at Brittany Tuttle. That's BRITTANITUTTLE. Yes, it's spelled funny on Twitter and Instagram. And twitch.tv/BrittPlays3Ts occasionally when my stuff works.
Jason, where can people follow you on social media?
Right here. Just right there is good enough.
There Instagram, you go.
Twitter, Jason_Hampton. Yep.
And you can find me, of course, at Banks Lee on Twitter, at Disney Goofball Instagram, and all the Attractions Magazine socials on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and, of course, attractionsmagazine.com. Once again, Jason, thank you so much for stopping by and talking to us. It's been great to have you and listen to all these stories. And we hope everyone out there stays safe and, most importantly, just have fun. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye, everybody.